Cowan, you return home from a day that has been more than exhausting. You're used to feeling a certain kind of tiredness after working in the mines all day, but this is different. This is kind of a mental exhaustion that you're not entirely used to. You come back to your mom's house. There's just a small illumination of an oil lamp still on the dining table as you enter. You do have electricity, but your mom still likes to use old methods sometimes. And for you, it kind of reminds you of childhood in a way. As you walk in, your mom is actually still up. She's wearing a nightgown. Standing at the dinner table, it looks like she's just putting away some things before going to bed. She turns around with a tired smile and places a hand on your cheek. What have you been doing today, my son? What have you been up to? You've been gone all day.
Oh, it's been fine, Ma. No, just I spent a lot of time just getting in touch back with, you know, the village folks. I ran a small errand for Officer Clark. Nothing too crazy. It's been a good day. How about you?
You did an errand for Officer Clark? That's very unlike you. Have you suddenly become a law-abiding citizen? She laughs a bit.
I left things here on certain terms, and I figured it'd be a good way to make a good impression coming back. And plus, Father Owen was there, a few others. It was nothing, really.
Well, I'm proud of you. That's a little different for you, and I think it's good for you, Cobbin. I think it's good you're getting back on track. You know, I know it's not easy for you to return. Everything is the same, but still so different. And, you know, people are talking, staring, and but I want you to know that you'll always be my son, and I'll always be proud of you. Oh, and by the way, there is a letter for you. She points to the table where there is a sealed envelope.
I narrow my eyes just a little bit, not suspicious, more quietly surprised.
Yes, it's from Birmingham.
Oh. I wasn't expecting anything. Do you mind trying to politely excuse myself to go look at it without ignoring my mother?
No, I will go to bed. You take your time. And she leaves the room.
So I'll walk over to the table where this letter is waiting. The envelope's a bit small. It's not the kind of envelope or the kind of paper stock that government documents come in or official things. It's definitely personal stationery of some kind. That's only adding to the confusion on my part. I can't think of anyone who would want to send me a personal letter. But there's only one way to get to the bottom of it. So, reaching down, tearing open along the seam, I open up this letter. It reads, "Dearest Carwin, how are you? I heard that you're back from the mines, and although it may be wrong taking my current situation as a married and virtuous woman into consideration, I must admit my thoughts wander towards Halkin in your direction. My sudden disappearance in what feels like so many years ago must have been quite the shock to you, and I never truly apologized. I hope you know my intentions were never ill, and it was not a matter of my doubt in my heart, but I had no choice. This brings me to the reason I write to you, dearest Carwin. I'm sure your mother has told you by this time, told you about my husband John and my two little ones. Jack just turned one this May, where Aoife turns 5 this October. I met John when I was 1 month pregnant, exactly 5 months after we spent that night together at the lake. I sincerely apologize for being horribly cryptic. I hope you understand what I'm trying to convey. Naturally, John thinks he is the father of Aoife, and I beg you to never tell him. Please forgive me for not telling you this before now. But I do believe you deserve to know, now that the war has let you go. My deepest thoughts and well wishes, your Irma. I've never felt that a piece of paper could weigh so much. And suddenly it feels like my arms have been held out in front of me for hours. It's a cryptic letter, but it's also crystal clear. And the weight of all of that is landing on my shoulders, in the base of my skull, filling up my head like a cloud, all these questions. The denial, of course, first it couldn't possibly be, but then also, and I find myself just leaning forward onto the table, both hands, palms splayed out, taking deep breaths, trying to control myself in this moment, trying to keep myself steady as this information rattles around my neurons.
Cowan, why don't you tell us about who Irma is?
Well, Irma sits at the center of my story of Halkin. I was one of the younger boys in the village, so the war was fully on before I was drafted, and that left me plenty of time to be around here getting into trouble. Irma and I were the same age, and we'd always been friends of a sort. Not rollicking best buds or anything like that, but in the same year and close enough that we spent a fair amount of time together. And as we grew into adolescence and then into later adolescence, that time we spent together started taking on a certain tone. It was flirtatious, young romance. I want to say that it was all a function of that raw young love attraction, but there was also a little bit of jealousy hiding behind it. She was the first young woman who'd ever given me the kind of attention that my older brother was always getting. And so, young hormones and those psychological wrappings all tangled up into this ball of, well, shall we say, non-traditional decisions. I don't know that Officer Byrne knows for sure what Irma and I were getting up to when he caught us that night. That story, it's already been told, about being hauled into town for violating the blackout rules, but, well, I suppose I don't have to be crude about it. Between that information and the content of this letter, I'm sure you can all guess what transpired that evening. But soon after that, I was off to the mines. I got my draft letter before she showed any sign. And now, knowing that I was sent away, and this is what happened, but I'd never had the chance to react or to speak with her about it, that I, even against my own desire, abandoned her in this situation, that's feeling pretty heavy right now.
Byrne, you wake up in the pretty early morning. You are used to waking up early, even if you've been out drinking for the entire night, because that was just what you did when you worked. You had to get up early for shifts. You hear your phone call, which is very odd at this time of day, but that's what wakes you up.
Swinging both legs over the side of the bed, and I get my hands, smell the room. Did I get that mess off the boots? I push myself off the bed and I start making my way over to the living room where the phone is. Thompson.
As soon as you pick up, you can hear that there's some sort of commotion going on at the other end of the line. You hear muffled yelling, a door slamming shut. You recognize a crying voice. It's Eva, your grandchild, in the background. And it's not the type of I'm tired cry or I want candy cry. No, this is the most distraught that you've heard Eva before. Irma's voice pierces through. She's distorted by fear. Dad, I have to come home. I can't stay here anymore. Dad, please. I'm sorry. This is all so horrible. It's so terrible.
Darling, slow down. Slow down, Emma. What's wrong? What happened?
You know that I always told you I moved to Birmingham because I found John. Well, it's not entirely true, Dad. Please don't hate me. I beg for your forgiveness. I'm stupid. The truth is, I got pregnant out of wedlock, Dad. You hear John's voice in the background. You can't make out entirely what he's saying, but it's something along the lines of, right you did, you whore. And you can definitely tell that he's inebriated.
You can't call her that. You're not allowed to call her that.
Dad, can I come home? Please, I have to go. I can't stay here.
Yes, of course. Come now, come.
Do you know the Davies boy, Cowan?
Yes, I know Cowan. Of course, I was spending half the day with him yesterday.
But it's Eva's his, not John's. I wrote him a letter and I don't know how John found out, but he's tearing the place apart.
Just get out of there, all right? Just take your things, get out of there. Or maybe when he's calmed down, or maybe when he has left for work. I never liked him. So just do what you think is safe. I'm coming. I'll come to get you. I'll get on a bus today.
No, Dad, just stay. I'll take a train, okay? Just I'll call you from the station when I'm there.
Do that. I'll ready Tiffany's room for you, and you will be staying there, and I'll do better with you in the house anyway, so.
I have to go, Dad. We'll see you later, okay? Bye. And she hangs up. How is Byrne feeling about this?
I'm feeling very mixed feelings. A part of me is worried for her, of course. I never liked John, I never trusted him. To hear him say those things about her, I want to... I just look over at the wall and I see my dad's old boxing gloves hanging there, and I'd like to give him a round or two. And then my mind wanders to Carwin. As if I hadn't figured that out myself. She met John quickly. I wouldn't believe her to meet someone on the fly and get pregnant with her. I know that children things that their parents see and nothing. But I am a policeman. This is what I've been doing my life. I saw the way they looked at each other in town, and I remember nothing clearer than ever than that night when I had to drag Carwin by the scruff of his neck while he was fastening his belt. Ah, it's good if she's coming back home. Her and Carwin. I need to fight. I want to call Marty. I want to fight him.
So with that dramatic beginning to end to the day, we return to the group. You have a couple of leads or a couple of ideas of what's going on in the town. What happened to the two missing children? Well, three missing children. What are you going to do?
Well, what's been on the top of my mind is Dean. Dean, who is very protective of Laurie, and from what I understand, it's shell-shocked. He is a person of interest. And then the list of conscripts at the police station. We found military boot prints, rope. Corin helped out, and I don't believe that his brother has anything to do with this. So the first person that I'd care to visit is Dean, as soon as I've cleared my head.
Owen's thoughts as he wakes up in the morning and gives Esther a kiss. This just isn't right. All this strangeness in Alkin, it doesn't sit right with me. There's the way people are reacting to it, the way people are responding, that children have gone missing and there isn't some massive public outcry, that it took us organizing it yesterday for a search to commence, and having not heard anything in the night, I'm assuming it wasn't successful. All I have is what Esther told me the night before, and I've got to be honest with myself, I don't know how much of what she's saying at this point is entirely lucid. But she said that there were lights flashing from the mountains, that there was something going on out there. Now, what that could mean, I don't know. I suppose there could be people working out there. But that isn't an operating mine. We know that the children have gone somewhere. I suppose it's only a natural conclusion. They must have been taken somewhere in the opposite direction of Halkin, and obviously not towards Cardiff, so the woods, the mountains are a logical place, but that requires a town to marching through the woodland and picking the place out inch by inch to see whether they can find anything. Owen is, frankly, split on what to do. He feels like it's his duty as a centre of the community to rally the people and get them to act in this way, but he's also divided in that he thinks that the community, some members of the community, may be hiding something that they know. He is, of course, incredibly concerned about Esther and doesn't really want to leave her alone. And most of all, he feels concerned for the whereabouts of these children, this young Anna dying in their arms just the day before. None of this is normal. And wrapping his head around how ends up making him go downstairs, goes into the living room, Esther's still in bed. And he doesn't do this in the bedroom, he doesn't want to worry her. It's not something he does often in the morning, quite frankly, but he slowly goes down to his knees, puts his hands together, lowers his head toward them, closes his eyes. Dear Lord, I think I need some... I need guidance. I know you're not the kind to just act in obvious ways. I'm not expecting a lightning bolt. I'm looking for confidence. I'm looking to feel sure about a course of action. Should I be the person leading these people? I've not been around for the best part of 7 years. Are these children okay? What's going on with these animals? These animals that aren't your creations, Lord. I know that. I've seen them. I've seen what they bleed. It's like nothing in your plan. I know that, but I think you've answered me. I think you've answered me in my prayer. I suppose I could have answered myself, and maybe that's the trick of it. Thank you. Thank you, God, and I will, they will be done. And I stand back up. Yes, the confidence that these creatures, these rats with human faces, these unnatural deaths and disappearances, that is God telling Owen what to do. That is God giving guidance to this aging vicar, that he can't just sit there and wait for someone else to solve this problem. If there's something on this earth that isn't God-made or God-born, then it is up to the faithful to handle it, where more mundane and cynical and jaded minds might refuse to take steps. He is prepared to take steps. So he makes himself a round of toast, puts on a pot of tea, and calls up to Esther and says, I've had my breakfast, love. I'm going out for a walk. I just need to catch up with some friends. Just, there's some tea on the hob. Don't let it boil over now. And I'll be back as soon as I can.
Remember to be back before the dark hours. You know, we have to be inside so they don't see us, the planes.
Don't worry, Esther. I'm pretty sure that the planes aren't going to be flying overhead tonight.
Oh, you never know. You never know about them.
I bite my tongue. There is a strong part of me that wants to almost march upstairs and correct her. And just tell her, now, stop. Stop all of this, but I stop myself from doing it. I know I'm getting the firm impression she can't help this, and so I just nod and to myself, and again I close my eyes. I say, look after her, please, Lord. And I exit the house, making my way toward the town centre, hoping that I run into one of my compatriots from the day before.
I don't wake up early. I didn't sleep very well. I'm not in a very good place at the moment. Yesterday was just a string of failure. Failure to save a young girl's life. Failure to get any information from Laurie. That was complete shambles. I don't know why I was so bad at it, but I was. I don't know if I did anything useful at all. Much like in the war. So many people I could have helped and saved, and I didn't. I failed them, and I'm failing again. And, well, I tried to find something to drink when I got home, and perhaps stuck into my father's whiskey shelf. And yes, I'm feeling it now. But I get up, do my best to be presentable. I don't really know what to do at all. I think I'm just going to go and tell the others what I know, which is little. Maybe they'll have something I can do, and I'll do that. That'll be something I can help them, because Mr. Byrne and Mr. Rowan and even Karen, they all know what to do. I have no idea. To be honest with you, I just want to go and see Rebecca. That's all I really want. All this horrible business with animals and missing children. But, well, no, I need to I need to be a man. I need to be strong. I need to help. I'll do my best to help, but I don't know how. But for now, I'm just going to dress nicely. Make sure I have a bit of a shave, and then I'll go into the town centre where I think the others said they'd be. Maybe I'll see Mr. Bird and I can tell him about Laurie. She definitely knows something, but I just couldn't get it out of her.
As it goes around in my head of what just happened, I put the receiver down slowly and I lift it back up to call Marty, but my hands, they stop. I need a fight. I need to clear my mind. It's that or the drink that usually does it for me. Carwin, I'm starting to dial the number of the Davis residence.
Carwin, the phone is ringing and you are in the kitchen.
Oh, well, to this point, I have no reason to believe anyone else knows what I know. I'm assuming this phone call has to do with today's events regarding the rats, etc. So, oblivious to what is coming, I cross the room, waving off my mother. No, it's fine, Ma. I'll get it. And pluck it up off the receiver. Davy's house.
Karin.
Oh, Constable Byrne. Good morning. I'm not late again, am I?
I need you to come over. I need you to bring a change. And I need you to come over.
To your place? All right. Is this about...
No chopsin. Just take your things and come over.
Okay. Sure thing. I'll be right there.
Now in a minute. And I hang up.
I hear him slam the receiver down, and I've got a pretty good idea what this is about. And that makes me dread leaving the house. My encounter with Officer Byrne was bad enough when there wasn't this additional context, but if Irma told me via letter, there's very poor odds that she hasn't also told. But there's no avoiding that, is there? So I will give my my mother a polite goodbye, kiss on the cheek, tell her I'm going back into town, still have those errands to wrap up.
Be careful, Cowan.
Oh, of course, Ma. No, I mean, it's nothing. We'll be fine. But if she's paying any attention to my face, I'm doing a terrible job of concealing the just waterfall of dread pouring over my features right now. But what is it? Stiff upper lip and all that? So I will collect my things and make my way to the Byrne residence. Not with an abundance of haste, but I also don't want to give Byrne too much time to stew on this.
All right, Byrne. About 25 minutes later, there is a very hesitant knock on your door.
And at this point, I will be in the backyard. I'm clearing out the old place that me and Marty and a few other friends used for our fights. I'm attaching the ropes again to the poles, and I'm just getting rid of a lot of rubbish that has been placed on the area. A lot of planks and house refurbishing stuff has just gathered up with my plans of rebuilding things that never happened. So I probably won't hear that knock, that very hesitant knock, but you can hear a bit of a commotion from the backyard with these things happening.
Is anyone else in the house home who would answer the door, or should I just go around back?
No, it will probably just be me.
Hearing nobody come rushing to the door, there's an enormous part of me that just wants to say, oh, yeah, he must have left, change his mind. I'll just meet him in town and it'll all be fine. But, I mean, I'm no coward and I'm also no idiot. And it's only a half second more before I can hear the sound of masculine work coming from behind the house. So I'm looking down at my feet, looking down at my hands. Well, I mean, this was going to happen eventually, only one way through it. I take a deep breath, steel myself on a constitutional level, and begin circling Burns' house. I spot him hard at work here, and I want to say maybe 10 or 15 feet away, just as I round the corner of his home. I'll call out. Officer Byrne.
Officer, I'm just Byrne now. Mr. Thompson, if you feel like keeping the... just Byrne. Put those on, I say, and then I look over you. I point at the pair of boxing gloves that's hang on one side of the ring, and then I look you over and see what you're wearing.
There hasn't been a chance to shop for any new clothing, so I'm still wearing one of the mining uniforms, just ratty work trousers, shirt to go with it, the same boots that I've been crawling around in the coal with.
Hmm. You happy to sweat in that?
I something tells me I don't really have much of a choice in that matter.
There's shorts and vest inside if you want to change. My friend Marty couldn't make it. You were not a scrawny boy. You're not afraid to go in the ring with an old man, are you?
No. Of course not, Mr. Thompson.
I'm gonna get this all just dusted out. Go change and... We come back here and go a round or two and then set off.
I've made the assumption at this point that this is about the letter that I've got from Irma. Is Byrne giving off any of that, or are you doing your best to kind of hold that back and make it seem like it's just a friendly sparring match?
I think it's more like kind of a general hostility that I've had all since... coming back towards more or less anyone, possibly except for Owen and Richard. Oh, all right, it is just you.
I'm not going to call attention to it. I have the distinct impression that this is something that Byrne needs to get out of his system. I have to stand and face it, and that's the only way we're going to go through it. So if he wants me to change and that's what needs to happen for this to go according to his plan and to provide whatever catharsis is coming, then that's what it has to be. Can't back down from that. So I'll go change. Clothes fit a bit odd, just based on the general form of my build. Short, but also stocky, built up more. And it's not more than a couple minutes after that before I'm walking out to meet Byrne in this ring.
I see you coming back from having changed, and I nod approvingly, and you see me being changed as well, standing on my side of the ring, and I just nod towards the gloves that on your side. All that time in the mine, I was didn't get your lungs suited up, did it?
Oh, no worse than anyone else, I guess.
Huh?
They told us you had to be down there a lot longer than we were before that kind of thing started to matter.
All right. Let's see how your footwork is. And I start going around. I take it pretty easy at first. Just trying the waters a bit, jabbing a bit, and going around. And, try and get a few hits in.
I have a suspicion about what's going on, but I also don't know for sure. In either case, I don't want trouble with Burn. I certainly don't want to hurt him. If he's just trying to blow some steam off generally, I don't want anything to come of it. But if this is about Irma, I also don't want to escalate. So as Burn is dancing around, Carmen doesn't know what Kingsbury rules or anything like that. But he stays up in a squared position, guard up, trying to stay on the strong side of Burn, but not going hard at him.
I'm not here to give you a cooch, boy. Well, loosen up. Come on, give me something.
There's a hint of hesitation. It's not obvious that Carwin's whole heart isn't here, but at the same time, he's not a great actor. So you see me kind of loosen up my shoulder a little bit, just give a nod. I'm just being patient, watching. And then as they continue to circle, waiting for Burn to come in with a hit that's just a little too hard. No offense to the old man, but maybe he thinks his strength is faster than his old age. And when his momentum carries him out just a little too far, that's when I'll counter across the weak side of his body.
Good. That's it. You were a real man, Carwin. You were a responsible man, I say, and I go in and I start jabbing again.
There's a word that starts to form on Carwin's lip as he tries to answer that question, but he's been giving Burn the short end of the estimation. It's a little too cocky after that hit. So I start to say, well, I mean, and then you hear the huh! as the glove connects just square on his sternum and crushes the air out of his lungs. Takes a couple steps back. I'm trying to put it back together, you know. I don't like the way things ended here. I'm trying to make a good impression.
Yeah, well, you have your chance now. Come on. Give me a good impression.
Oh, he's torn between it. Like, I can see that there's something that he wants out of this, but I'm also just so hesitant. So with the guard still up, I say, Burn, I'm happy we're doing this, but what's this about? And then I'll go in for the swing. That's an 82, so you block that.
I duck out, bob and weave out of the way. You like talking to pretty girls? Carwin, you like talking to girls just like your brother?
Oh, is this about yesterday with Carolyn? And he's stepping left, again, just trying to keep a little bit of distance. Not quite sure if I have reach on Burn or not. No, that's just about this mess that we're in with the rats.
I swing from the left, and I just about touch your nose. You're trying to become your brother Elgin? I move around you.
Oh, there's no chance of that. No, but I don't know. I can be a better man than I was when I left, that's all.
And this, you see me now, I'm starting to get really pissed off. And I'm starting to go all in. And I move in and I start just trying to give you a pummeling. How do you respond to that?
So I'll stay up in guard and watching you get angry. It doesn't feel like a sparring match anymore. So I'm taking the hits in, have a guard up. I mean, maybe one or two is going to slink through, but I've been through a lot down in the tunnels, so I'm taking it. As you're laying in, I imagine Burn kind of like hunched forward, just left, right, like going in for the side of the ribs. So my guard posture's closed up, and as Burn is doing all of this, I'll say, I got a letter from Irma this morning, Burn.
Yeah? She called me this morning. And I step back a bit. Coming back to good old Halkin. How do you feel about that, Carwin Davies?
Burn, you know that wasn't what I wanted. That was never what it was supposed to be like. And if I knew, I would have done everything different if I knew. And now I'm going to come back at him because his aggression's getting to me. That's an odd one.
There's a second there of me looking like I am pleased that you're stopping, you just stop taking hits, and seeing that you open up a little bit, I go in for a swing, but in a lightning beat, I'm just suddenly on the floor. I'm just looking up at the sky, and there's just colors going by, fluttering like birds before my eyes. And I just lie there. I just look up at the sky. And this whole morning, the last 5 years, just flies by. It's like a swooshing sound.
It's only after I see Byrne sprawled out that I realized the anger that had come out of me in that. It was him getting into the exact same tone he'd had when he pulled me into the center of town and made this whole mess of it. But so I'll lower my fists, take a few steps closer. So I'll take one of the gloves off, reach down to kind of help him back up to his feet, if he'll take it, and say, I know this isn't over, but you gotta trust me. What I'm gonna try to do right by this, all right? For once. By you and by Irma and by the town.
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying where we played the campaign The Whispers of the Mountains for Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition. The Whispers of the Mountains was written by Clara Herbel, who was also our keeper. We were joined by Aaron Hammonds from Queen's Court Games, as well as Matthew Dawkins. The music is from the Cthulhu, Nyarlathotep, Yog-Sothoth, Shub-Niggurath, and Asatoth compilations made by our friends at Cryochamber, as well as the Paleowolf album Genesis. Check them all out at cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel for more music for your gaming table. We'd like to give massive thanks to our Champions of the Red Moon, Martin Hoyschobert, Nastasha Wallerson, Simon Cooper, David, Julia, Camilla, Ludwig Manford, Bob DeLang, and Julian for their generous support. And we would, of course, also like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, the show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cult of Indie Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show as a champion of the Red Moon, as well as play Cult with us. Most importantly, that support is what keeps the show going, so do check us out there. Thank you again for listening. And remember, that is not dead which can eternal lie, and with strange eons, even death may die.